Hello, Rose friends. Tonight we have Dr. Mark Windham from the University of Tennessee with us. Most of you will recognize his name and know that he is one of the leading researchers working on the horrible threat to our roses known as rose rosette disease. Mark has a very serious update for us regarding the research funding. Our rose community is strong, and I'm sure we'll be ready to help once we are armed with the details.
It's time for the Rose Chat Podcast, a podcast dedicated to celebrating the world's most beloved flower, the rose. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington as they chat with rose lovers and experts from around the globe. With each episode, you'll gain valuable knowledge and insights to achieve the rose garden you've always dreamed of. Listen now as we explore the world of roses.
Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Easy to brew and use on all indoor and outdoor plants. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Hey, Mark, welcome back to Rose Chat.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're glad to have you. Now, Mark, tonight you have something very important to talk to us about, and we're going to get right to it. The title says Rose Rosette Research is in Peril.
Many of you know, but there is a national Rose Rosette research team. Our research for the last 5 years have been funded by a federal grant. The grant we had to reapply, which is the normal thing to do. Unfortunately, when the grant was submitted, the files were corrupted. And the proposal did not go through. Texas A&M did everything they could, but what they were not able to get it done. Their appeal was denied, which is typical and the normal thing. I've never heard of an appeal be successful. And so what this means is we're out of money, and research is stopping. And we can talk a little bit about what we've learned and what still needs to be done. But the bottom line is I'm sitting here right now trying to figure out what I can still do and do I have to plow all my work under. So that's where we're at the moment.
That's not where we want to be. That's not where we want to be. So let's go back just a little bit and talk about where we are with the research.
What do we know? Well, let's talk resistance first, because that's usually something people are most interested in. There are several schools that are involved. Texas A&M is the lead. We screen at Tennessee. We've screened over 1,200 cultivars and breeding lines for resistance. Some of those are also screened at the University of Delaware and some at Oklahoma State. They don't have as much space as I do, so we want them tested at two locations. All of them are tested at UT, and that is University of Tennessee, and then some at Delaware and some at Oklahoma State. Out of those 1,200 plus, we have some good news. Approximately 4% of the roses that we tested still do not have symptoms or test positive for the virus. And that's a big deal. The problem is that most of these roses are not ones that you would want in your garden. So we have to get resistance from these 4% into roses that have desirable horticultural characteristics. We've started that. Last year, Texas A&M sent me 1,600 seedlings that are in the field where at least one of the parents comes out of that 4%. In some cases, two do. And we need to be testing them. But the problem is, I'm sitting here trying to figure out, can I do this or do I have to plow them under? That is exactly where we're at. It's a very frightening time. And this is occurring at a time when, on average, we're losing about 10 to 15%, and it's closer to 15%. In some states, it may be higher than that. We're losing that percentage of roses each year to rose rosette. Teresa and Chris, as you know, we have four miticides. Akari, Forbid, Contost, and Talstar. These are commercial miticides. Tau Star has bifenthrin in it, and that is in over 200 homeowner products. So we have something for homeowners to use. The problem is, when we were doing that research, we were trying to figure out if they would work at all. We used way too much chemical. What we're trying to do now is to figure out how little chemical can we use, how far can we stretch between spray applications. And in some cases, some of these miticides now have legal limits that we can only use them. Forbid can only be used 4 times a year. And so we're trying to figure out how to minimize miticide usage, but maximize the effects that we're getting. Some people don't want to use miticides. So we're just now beginning to look at what I consider to be biosafe options. This mite, the mite that vectors this disease, is a niche mite. It likes to hide, but it does have to come out to disseminate itself to another rose bush. And so what we're trying to do is to determine when that is occurring and to see if we can catch it at that time and destroy it with oils and or sulfur. And if we can, this would be a safer approach. You know, and we have a number of other studies that were targeted to be going on this year. You know, a plant that has rose rosette will have anywhere from 43 to 70 times as many mites on it as a healthy plant. And we're trying to figure out what we can do about that. We now know that when you're removing a plant, you don't have to bag it. The worry was that the mites would drop off very quickly. They don't. They stay in place for at least 36 hours. So you've got plenty of time to cut the bush out. You don't have to bag it. We just learned that this past year, and a publication on that just came out.
It's really good news because some of those roses are big.
Some of them are big. We're looking at where the mite overwinters. And then once we know that, you know, where does it overwinter on the bush? When we know that type of thing, well, then can selective pruning be done to reduce a person's on their roses to reduce the populations of mites that are overwintering? You see, most of the research that's been done in the past was done on multiflora rose and was not done on cultivated roses. We're learning that everything that helps for multiflora rose does not necessarily hold for our cultivated roses. So we're having to look at some things now that we thought we already knew the answers to, but we didn't. And so this is something we're having to look at. There are some compounds on the market that actually enhance a plant's ability to defend itself against infections. Mm-hmm. And we want to know if any of these things work for rose rosette. There's a couple of compounds that actually impede the virus's ability to infect when the plants have been sprayed with it. Will this work for rose rosette? We don't know. Those are the types of research that's now been put on hold. One of the things that I have been interested in here of late, I've had a number of people contact me who have very large climbers. Some of these climbers go halfway across a large building. They're gigantic plants. And they have one little sprig or shoot of rose rosette. Now, the standard practice would be to remove the bush. But you can understand why they are reluctant to do so. Mm-hmm. Some of these bushes are very, very old. We do know that the virus moves out of the infected shoot. It's not always fast that it does so, but when it does, it moves to the roots. And from the roots, it's going to go to the growing points of the plant. But can we catch it early? It's not just a virus would come into the roots and then just be all over the root system all at once. No, it's going to come in to a particular part of the root system. So if we can figure out how to determine where that is, can we selectively root prune and then cure the plant. And so that's one of the things that we want to look at. Fortunately, for several years, I taught plant anatomy, and I can't believe that I'm having to go back to that. But I am, because it may hold some answers that would help us. And so this is the type of research that's in peril. Now, that's the research at my end. There are people whose research are impacted where they're looking at how the virus infects, how virus resistance is inherited. There's a lot of things that have been stopped. A lot of the resistance work is considered long-term. Dr. Dave Burns estimates that it could take 15 to 17 years for resistant cultivars to come onto the market. And I'm charged to come up with ways to keep people from losing their roses until resistance can replace the stuff that I'm trying to figure out. So I guess you could say, in some ways, I'm planned obsolescence. Right now, best management practices is all we've got. And so we've got to improve them. Roses are continuing to die. And so we don't have much of a choice. It's a very embarrassing place to be. 34 years of doing this. Never been in this position before.
When can we reapply for the grant?
And there's likely that there'll be a call for proposals next year. If it is, and we're successful, and we have every reason to think we would be, money would then start to flow again in September of 2020. But what that leaves us with is this summer and next. Now, unfortunately, some things of research, we can't just mothball. In other words, we just can't turn it off. And then we get to the really hard part. There are some people that are under illusions that this 64-year-old college professor does all of this stuff by himself. That is absolutely not true. I do have to teach and do some other things as well. I have a lab team that have been with me for years, and they're the hand. You know, without them, none of this stuff gets done. And unfortunately, come late July or early August, as it stands right now, I will be laying all of them off.
So what kind of money are we talking about?
It's a shock factor for most people when we talk about money of this type. My budget to do everything we do is right at $200,000 a year. Through some very serious decisions on the budget, prioritizing some of the research that I talked about, and which things have to be done right now, which things we can mothball, I've been able to reduce that by 25%. So we're talking about $150,000, with most of that being in labor. These are skilled hands. These are not just people off the street. You know, they've been with me from the beginning on this in some cases, but I'm going to have to let them go. Now, they certainly have been warned, and they're looking at other jobs. I may lose some of them much quicker than that, but they're dedicated to this. They love roses as much as I do. They don't want to leave. They want to stay here and see this job done, because they have invested a lot of their own blood in it. As all rosarians, we all invest blood in roses, because the dang things bite. So they've really invested a lot of blood as well as sweat.
So we've got a strong rose community. How can we help?
Well, this is something that I've never had to do before. We're asking people to help. The main way that they can help, donate towards the research. 100% of the money that we get for rose rosette research goes for rose rosette research. It's also tax deductible. We ask people to make the checks out to the University of Tennessee. If they have questions, though, they can email me at mwindham, that's W-I-M-W-I-N-D-H-A-M, at utk.edu. Now, I know that there's nobody out there that has $150,000 laying around. Well, Chris might, but most people don't. And the key is, as Chris knows in banking, money is additive. There are ways to reach that kind of figure where if a lot of people are donating, the actual amount that each person donates doesn't have to be very much.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some people donate several thousand dollars. We've had some people donate 25. And I can assure you, I have a database. I send everybody when they contribute a thank you card. And then every quarter until this research is funded again by a federal grant, I'm going to send a progress report as to where we are, what we've accomplished with the money that we've gotten, and what still needs to be done. We look at people who contribute as being a vital part of our team.
Well, of course, this is not what we want to hear. No, this isn't the fun stuff. And it came home to me this year. I've been pretty insulated from Rose Rosette, although I think there's some in our area. But I had to dig up a big climber this year. And, you know, those kind of things are heartbreaking. You know, we love these plants and we don't want to lose one and we don't want it infecting others. I mean, we need this research and we need you working. So we just can't thank you enough for all that you're doing and your team and the teams across the country that are trying to get the job done for us.
I've had nursery people that have sustained, in some cases, losses in a $500,000 range in 1 year. One rose company, more than $1 million. Chris, they cannot sustain those kind of losses each year. One of those nurseries used to more than 1 million roses a year. He's now down to 200,000, and he told me, if I can't help him, he's going to get out of roses completely. If enough people do that, where will we get our roses from? I grow roses. I love roses. And I dang sure like new ones. The bottom line is we've got to figure out a way to help keep the rose industry healthy until resistance comes along.
Yeah.
And that may be a decade and a half from now. So the pressure is on. We feel the pressure tremendously, and instead of sitting here for the last month and a half trying to figure out how to maximize our efforts to obtain as many results as possible, I've been trying to figure out what to mothball, what to eliminate, and if I have to plow under my 5 acres of resistance trials. And I very well may have.
About a year ago, you guys published a guide to rose diseases and their management. I think you and your brother, Alan, and a gentleman by the name of Alan Hinn, you know, we're going to put that guide on the show page, a free resource available to our listeners. And it'll step you through what rose rosette looks like, how to detect it, what to do when you see it. And, you know, that goes a long way in helping stem some of this in home gardens, I think, and for landscape professionals, too.
I agree. We also have, and I'm going to send you the link for it, a guide on how to detect rose rosette early in your garden. There is a lot of materials on the web about detecting rose rosette after it's been in your garden for a while and the symptoms are very vivid. But this guide concentrates on what the initial symptoms look like. That can be very critical. But the disease guide you talk about, rose diseases and their management, that is something that Alan Hinn and Alan Windham and I did. That is available through rose.org, which is the American Rose Society webpage. We know a lot of people, when they're interested in getting information on how to do better with their roses, Rose.org is one of the first places they go.
Mark, thanks so much for coming on tonight.
Well, I appreciate y'all having me on.
Well, the subject may not be pleasant, but it's always pleasant to talk to you, Mark.
Hey, and it is good to talk to the two of you.
We place links to all the resources Dr. Windham spoke of on today's broadcast, as well as the mailing address if you'd like to make a monetary donation to help continue this vital research effort. Well, friends, that's all the time we have for this edition of the Rose Chat Podcast, and we thank you for listening today. Until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
You've been listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington, expert rose gardeners who want to help you achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Don't miss an episode. Listen anytime on our website at rosechatpodcast.com. Or listen on the go via the Rose Chat app. on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Share this podcast with your social networks and join us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by using the hashtag RoseChat. Join us next time for another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. The Rose Chat Podcast is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.